Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Grayscale Gorilla podcast. We're always so excited to have you listening and or watching. As always, here we have Chad Ashley. What is up?
Hey, everybody. How you doing?
And Chris Schmidt, how was your weekend?
Hey, pretty good. And I just realized I forgot to plug my headphones in.
So oh, no.
Keep going.
Chris, get your headphones. It's a big day here. We got, might be a little short one today, but this is what they call action-packed. It's action-packed podcast. We have a hard out here at about 45 minutes because the eclipse is rolling through and we all want to go see it, including me. So I'm pretty pumped for it. I got my eclipse watch in box. Everyone got their eight pairs of sunglasses or whatever you're using?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I've got a couple lenses here from an old set of welder's goggles and then some camera filters. And I was outside testing it and they seem to work pretty well.
Oh, good. All right. See, do I need that to take a photo too or no?
I was reading that if you were to point your camera straight at the sun, you can damage your sensor.
Mm. Oh yeah, that's for sure true. I think that especially if you have like a telephoto lens or any sort of magnification lens on it. I think the reason that I read you can't, it won't hurt your phone. It's because your phone's a very wide aperture, wide angle
lens. Oh, zoom.
It's those that are dangerous. But, hey, man.
Well, hey, you know what? By the time this comes out, the eclipse will be rolling through. So let's just say, oh, it's great.
Yep.
It was great, everybody.
I can still see.
I'm not going to make that claim.
People are worried about their dogs like accidentally looking at the sun. It's like, what keeps them from doing that any other day?
Yeah.
Like your dog all of a sudden's like, whoa, that's weird. Let me look at, oh my God, I'm blind.
Chris, you might not be on your actual mic. You might be on like
your mic.
Yeah, you tap your mic for me for us in the audience. Oh no. See what you could do there. Just I don't know if it'll break anything, but if not, a little how behind. Say that again.
How about now?
It sounds a little bit better.
A little bit better. Not perfect, but see what you got there. While Chris is messing with his mic, I have a question for you guys. Have you seen Matrix in the last 5 to 10 years? The first The Matrix.
Are you asking me or the audience?
I'm asking you two.
In how many years?
I don't know. Like in it came out in 99. Okay, so it's almost 20 years old. And has anybody seen it in the last, I don't know, 5 to 10 years?
Yes.
Yes. And what did you think?
I thought it was still fun. Still kind of corny and a little bit dated, but still fun.
I think it's still pretty amazing. Am I coming in okay now?
Yeah, that's better. Sounds way better. Thank you, Chris.
I watch it fairly often. I've got like the big old box set, and I think the thing that's aged the best is actually the Animatrix, like the animated ones. But I don't know. It's kind of that over the top, like late 90s cool, and a lot of that stuff aged really poorly. But the Matrix aged the best of that genre, where it's like, you know what? Those coats are still pretty cool. Those are some pretty cool sunglasses.
I don't know.
I think
that's where it hit me the most is like, ooh, those coats. Like,
will the leather duster always be cool?
Yeah, I know. I'm like, oh no. Like, I don't know if anybody out there loves the movie Grandma's Boy as much as I do.
Oh, but yeah.
I just immediately think of that character that's like the video game designer who talks like a robot and he thinks he's in the Matrix all the time. I just can't not watch that movie and think of that character.
That's true. That's super biased. Well, what I'm saying is usually that stuff is really, really bad. And in The Matrix, it's only a little bit bad.
So it's been on my, like, I should rewatch this movie list for a long time because in 99, in kind of my, like, my rebirth or my first real access to movies I liked as a grown up, that was one of them. That was one of them that stood out. And I basically, you know, I didn't have a great, I didn't love movies as a kid. I watched them, but I just kind of watched the same ones over and over again. And I wasn't like artistically attracted to them. And through high school, all my friends watched Titanic like 8 times. So I'm like, this is not interesting to me. And Matrix was one of those early ones in my life where I'm like, okay, this is really interesting. And it's got a creative concept and it's visually beautiful. And it was kind of the, you know, that can't, and then Tarantino was doing his thing. Like that, there was this resurgence, at least for me personally, of like really interesting, cool movies that got me back into film making, that got me back into, and eventually, by the way, it led me down the path to be a motion designer. So that was always on my list, like that one and Fight Club and like all these kind of late 90s movies. So it's been on my list, and just kind of had one of those nights where I'm like, I don't know what to watch. And I just kind of, I don't want to watch something new, but let's see if Matrix is still good. Right. That was kind of the concept. And so I fired up and it was very cheesy. I didn't realize how cheesy that movie is. Like, oh, yeah. The dialogue is awful, like so bad, but the set pieces, like the way the action stuff, like, to remember that all that stuff didn't exist before that movie was mind blowing. Like, and I know it existed and they didn't invent it like flat out, but they made that style super popular, and it's a beautiful way to make a movie. It's really, really compelling. But I couldn't get over how dang cheesy that movie was. And I had no clue how cheesy it was when I first watched it, because my mouth was open the whole time because of the concept. Right. It was so beautiful, and the whole concept that, like, you're not the world you think you're in, and that whole thing, when you're 19, that stuff blows your mind. And so the bad dialogue, my wife and I giggled and paused it and like repeated the lines back and forth every time Keanu would open his mouth. Anyway, I just wanted to see where that was, because it didn't dawn on me how it was. Chris, you like the other two movies? You have the dang box set.
The other two are pretty awful, honestly. Like, I remember when I left the theater at the third movie, I was mad. I was actively angry when that movie ended, because it's a big tease. The second movie, it's not a movie, it's half of a movie. So you had to wait a year or however long was between them to see the second half of this movie. And it's like, well, I'm going to withhold judgment until I see how it actually ends. It's like, maybe they can do it, maybe they can't. And then it comes and it's the worst thing. And it's so awful.
Yeah, that horrible underground rave that happened.
Oh, man.
Oh, the second one. Yeah, I didn't see the third one because of the second one. It was just, it was bad. It was bad. But I've always had this thing in my heart for the first one. I had to go through it. So I wanted to share that with you guys, because it's not every day I'm watching a movie, you know. It's
gotta start watching Game of Thrones, man, because Game of Thrones last night, no, I couldn't sleep last night. Game of Thrones had me like totally messed up.
Oh, really? I thought it was a disappointing episode.
Oh, man, not me. I was like, what?
Well, that's a podcast for another day.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I can't do the dragons, man. I can't do wizards and fucking warriors, man. There's something about that aesthetic that has never hit my head.
I'm Willow, not into it either, but like that movie or that TV series is really well done.
If they remake it as a crime drama, I'm in.
That would be interesting.
Possible.
we'll have somebody out there is probably interested in doing
just
that.
Just watch The Wire.
Spielberg. Yeah, see, right. The Wire. I love The Wire. And I have like three more episodes of The Wire I could watch before I watch some like wizards and dragons running around.
I don't know if there's, is there wizards? I don't think there are, but
there's no wizards. There's
always a wizard.
It's definitely dragons.
Just wait. There's some wizards going to pop out. Try to
say you thought there were no wizards. What?
What? Oh my goodness. What am I doing with my life? All right. So what's going on? What's this podcast about? It's about movies and wizards. It's about
all kinds of stuff.
Chad, why don't you get us on topic? About
making you a better motion designer.
That's right. Why don't you get us on topic, Chad? What's going on in Render Wars? In what's going on in 3D World? What are you up to?
Let's see. Render Wars update. The big news that kind of broke after our last podcast, that
you were so upset.
I was bummed out that we didn't have this in there. But I'm sure everybody that's kind of been paying attention probably already knows, but for those of you who rely on the Render Wars update, here is the news. The biggest development last week is that Arnold Solid Angle has decided to create a really interesting pricing package for those of you with multiple licenses. They're now offering 5 packs for $1,500, which is a really good deal considering they were significantly more if you bought them individually. So this is a great deal for small studios or even large studios, really. Then the other half of that news is they decided to give it away for free to educational institutions. So if you are a school, you now have access to Arnold for free, which is pretty insane. So that's a pretty bold move by these Solid Angle folks.
That's cool.
Pretty cool, actually. I'm glad that they did that. Other news, there's been some hints about some new Octane features that aren't really super... I can't really say them yet. I'm not really sure how many of them are going to actually make it to the C4D plugin. So I'll wait till next week if any news comes out there.
Are they would, if they did come out, would they be exciting to you?
Hold off. I'll let you know next week. Other than that, really not much. Everybody keeps plugging along. Redshift continues to grow in interest, and I hope to be able to. I keep getting the question, when are you going to do tutorials for Redshift? As soon as they tell me I can, I will. I'll try to even do like a live event of some sort just to say, hey, check it out. This is how I use it, and this is how it works in a really quick kind of way.
Yeah, and if you haven't seen Chad's article, I think it came out last week, but if you haven't seen it, it's new to you, you know, and we're going to keep this page updated. It's all about what, you know, all the different renderers, where they sit right now, and kind of trying to get as much info out to you guys so you can make an informed decision about what renderer to use if you're interested in transitioning. So definitely check that out. It's on our blog. We'll link it up in the show notes as well. And other Grayscale Gorilla news, we also just relaunched our animation fundamentals. Now, if you've seen this before, we had a class called Animation Fundamentals, and our teacher, David Brodeur, made an awesome video series, but it was also packaged together previously with some live critique and some live shows with David one-on-one. And because of David's involvement and because of so much, you know, teacher involvement, the price for that class was significantly higher than some of our other products and things like that. And it was a great class. People got a lot out of it, but so many of you asked about a less expensive version of it. And I'm so happy to announce it is out. So what we did is we took all the videos and we basically just removed the live critique part of the training. So you're going to have access to the same exact videos, over 9 hours of animation training. If you've ever wanted to dive in and learn the timeline in Cinema 4D and, you know, try, you know, not rely on MoGraph and Dynamics for every time you animate like I do, check it out. It's really, really awesome series. We have a ton of students that went through it, gave us great feedback, and it's significantly less expensive now, much more affordable for those of you who want the videos and want to, jump in and get animating. I will say though that we added our Slack channel. We added a private Slack channel. What do they call those? Channels. What groups? What do you call those things? We added one just for Animation Fundamentals students and alumni so that you can get your work critiqued there. So in other words, we're going to show you guys how you can post your work and get critique from your students or from your peers and from anybody else that's been in the course before. So we think it's a great way to learn animation. Definitely check that out. We'll put that in the show notes. And so many of you were asking for a more affordable version of that, and it's on the store now. So definitely check that out. Anything else, guys, that's going on in the store coming up soon? Chad, you got a live show.
Oh, yeah.
I don't do. Have we scheduled? Are we going to schedule this live show live on the podcast, or is it already?
Yeah. Why not tomorrow, Tuesday, August 22nd, 1 o'clock.
Central. 1 o'clock central. I think that's correct.
I think that's when we're doing it.
Correct.
Yeah. So there you go. Twitch. What I'm going to do is the reason. I don't really need a reason, but here's the reason. I'm going to go on there and talk about how to make metal look awesome using our HRI Metals pack. It's not just going to be one long commercial. I promise you will get something else out of it in terms of setting up metal shaders and whatnot. But the real reason...
Explain why those reflections, like how you actually set it up so you can make reflections look
good. Give away my secret sauce?
What are you crazy?
No, the secret sauce is staying with the family recipe, my friend.
Well, I think the thing watching Chad show off these HDRIs that I always get a lot out of, and I think you will too if you show up to the live show tomorrow, is the way that Chad sees a render. When the IPR render is going and Chad's picking which HDRI, which lighting source works the best for different objects, that's when I learn the most, because you see stuff that I don't see. You are like, okay, this, see that backlight? It's not quite, you know, going across the front of the car the way I think it should. So let's twist it a little bit, or let's rotate the camera, or let's move, or let's try a different HDR. Like, this one's too bright for this scene, or this one's too dark. Those are the insights I get when I watch you, you know, click through HDRs and go, nope, not that one. I'm like, what are you talking about? That looks great. You're like, not for Chad. It doesn't. Listen. Let me step this wow. out.
So yeah, there'll be some of that. There'll be some of me going, definitely, not that one.
This one. And you're like, well, how did you know that? So I think the insight from a lot of that stuff will be fun to watch. And it's on our new Twitch page. So if you haven't followed us over there, we're going to be doing more stuff live over on Twitch. It's twitch.tv/grayscalegorilla. And we're going to put those in the show notes as well, which, by the way, if you're watching on YouTube, down in the description, if you're listening on the podcast, we're going to put those in the show notes there as well. So yeah, so let me tell you guys about listen, if you were here last week, you heard our very first Grayscale Gorilla sponsor, and we're really excited to do this. You know, the podcast has been basically the number one thing people talk to us about when we're at SIGGRAPH or we're at NAB. You know, a lot of people are using our products and our training, but so many of you come up to us and say, man, I love the podcast because I get to hang out with you guys. I get to learn about, you know, my job and figure this stuff out with you guys. And so as it's grown, we're also looking into sponsorships, and we're so excited to have our very first sponsor, and it's none other than Maxon. Dude, give it up to Maxon. Thank you for making, first of all, thank you for making Cinema 4D and so many of us a career as well. But they wanted us to let you know about a promotion they're doing right now, and it ends at the end of August. So make sure you check this out before August ends. And it is this: if you buy Cinema 4D as a new license, or if you upgrade an older license to a new one, you're going to get R19 for free when it comes out. So if you are waiting for R19, or you're like, okay, I'll buy it then, you don't have to wait. In fact, you can start using Cinema 4D today with a real license, and as soon as R19 ships, you're going to get it for free. They're going to send you the download, and you could start using it right away. So that offer ends at the end of August, and they set up a special URL to go to. It's gsg.maxon3d.com. And if you go there, you're going to learn more about all the offers they have. And just something to keep in mind, this is not for MSAs. It's not for the yearly updates. But if you are behind on your update, if it's been a few years since you've upgraded to Cinema 4D, now's an awesome, it's the best time to do it, is in August. And if it's been a few years, I really encourage you guys to check out what they've added in the last few editions of Cinema 4D. Not only in R19, but if you haven't seen all the stuff from R18 as well, they have added so much great stuff over the last couple of years. And if you're not aware of it, definitely check it out. We have a ton of videos about R18 up on our site as well. You could watch and see if it's right for you. And like I said, take advantage of this before August ends. Go to gsg.maxon3d.com for new licenses and upgrades only. And a big, huge thanks to Maxon for sponsoring the Grayscale Gorilla podcast. Thank you so much. Woop, woop. Woo, woo is correct. So we got a couple topics today on our list. We get great questions from you guys in our YouTube and on iTunes as well. And it always gives us some thoughts about, you know, topics we could talk about on the show, which reminds me, if you have something you're struggling with as a motion designer, as a professional, you know, drop it in the comments. We love those kind of questions, and we love discussing them and kind of getting different perspectives on it. So definitely check that out. And what do we got today? We got a couple questions. Is that right?
Yeah, we got two questions that I think would definitely carry us through the episode. The first one comes from, do we want to say names, or do you guys want to keep this?
I think we say names if it's, yeah, at least their Twitter name if they did.
All right. What was the Twitter name of this first person, Chris? I think you posted it in.
Matt Milt.
Matt Milt says, love the podcast. What kind of animation did you guys originally want to do? And is it still what you do? And I think what he's meaning to say there is, what kind of motion design or work did you guys originally want to do when you got into this business? And is it what you're doing now? So is it? And
yeah, I mean, actually, Chris, I'd be interested in that one for you. Like, what got you into all this stuff?
You know, I've thought about exactly what got in. I've mentioned before that what made me interested in 3D animation was two old Saturday morning cartoons. It was Reboot and Beast Wars, Transformers Beast Wars, but mostly Reboot. And when I think back to it, those are the two, those two shows are what made me say, I'm going to go do 3D animation. But the original appeal for me is that those shows, they were very tiny kind of in their, I don't know the right word, but it's almost like in their production, you could see, you could feel the hand of the creators in those shows where you could feel like there's this tiny team and the shows started out kind of clunky. And as the technology improved, the show improved and the writing got better and the characters got better. Everything, you could actually feel them learning and getting better with it. And I really, really wanted to be a part of creating something like that. So the original appeal wasn't even specifically 3D. It was being a part of like telling the story and getting better and getting invested in characters and going deeper and deeper. And I think I dove into 3D specifically because it's like, oh, this is my way of starting to do that. I'm going to be able to contribute or even create my own animations by doing that. So that was my initial jump into it that made me want to, you know, they actually sat me down behind some 3D software. But as soon as I was behind the software, my focus completely shifted because playing around with 3D just clicked with my brain so well, where it was artistic, but it's also technical. And there were so many different parts of it. I often jump from thing to thing to thing. I have a lot of hobbies and I kind of cycle around, but I can never get bored of 3D because there's so many different aspects to it. If you get bored with modeling, you can do some lighting. If you're bored with lighting, you do particles. If you don't like particles, you do some dynamics. Let's do some UV unwrapping. Let's just do some simulation. Let's build a whole short film. There's always something new to do in 3D. And by the time you've kind of gone through all of them, it's like a year later and you're like ready to go back to the beginning and do some more modeling again. So
are you never get bored with it. Are you bummed in any way, or do you that you didn't end up working you know, on a like a short film or in cartoons or any in the story side of things? Like you mentioned the story and was one of the reasons you got into it. And when you finally when you found out that cinema clicked for you, do you ever have a thought like, oh, I wonder what would have happened if I were to be making Saturday morning cartoons right now?
Yes and no. I mean, well, and just to cap that off, like as I used Cinema 4D a whole bunch, I eventually get a full-time job and I started building my own tools. And then I found out what I really, really loved doing was creating tools and creating something that has all this future potential ends up being like my super favorite thing. So I'm super happy with what I'm doing now. But of course, and I think it's a natural human thing, like everybody, we love stories, we love hearing stories, we love telling stories. But I think I get that outlet via other things. I have other projects I do, and I can, you know, you can always, I do it less now, but I always had like some short film idea or something I was tinkering with, and I have a new idea and then drop the old one and start working on the new one. And even now I run a Dungeons and Dragons game where I'm the DM. So I'm creating this whole universe and we have people playing it. And that satisfies like the creative element of, I want to go and create these stories and whatnot. And having said that, it would be fun to do like some sort of short film or something that like really got focused and broken down and work on it. But I don't know. There's a lot of different ways of tackling that. And it's definitely different than my original approach. But I think what I discovered just fits better.
So. Yeah, it sounds like if we're trying to answer this for someone else too, it's you went in with certain expectations, but I think you were at least open to the idea, or when you discovered that it wasn't quite what you wanted, but you found something even better, you were open to that different path.
Definitely.
And
definitely.
Saying like, okay, well, maybe I'm not animating, you know, Reboot, but I'm now, I just realized like you're now making tools that filmmakers are using, right? Like you found your way through it. Chad, what was your original way into this? And are you doing that?
Yeah, my original way was kind of similar to Chris's, really. I thought I was going to be making animated cartoons and more hand-drawn animated cartoons. And then I think I told the story maybe once or twice before. It just didn't work out that way. Got into 3D more, doing commercial like spots and stuff like that, and really kind of fell in love with the process of 3D and just 3D in general, and all the different, like Chris was saying, all the different ways that you can use it to tell stories and even help brands sell products. That really wasn't like why I loved doing what I was doing. In fact, I always joked, I'm like, I love what I do, I just don't really like who I do it for. And that was because I would always struggle with that idea of like, I'm making a commercial to sell something to someone, which it was always kind of weird for me. But I think as time went on, I just kind of got really into the storytelling aspect, the filmmaking aspect of that job, and sort of learned to accept the fact that it was advertising, and eventually kind of embraced it. And really along that journey, realized that everything, when I would go to work every day, even at when I was at DK, I didn't get excited about having a meeting where we were brainstorming about some marketing campaign. That didn't excite me. I didn't get excited about talking about how a specific shot was going to sell more product or move more units or anything like that. What got me excited was meeting with my 3D team and talking about how we were going to tackle a really tricky aspect to this shot or this job, or getting into my office and shutting the door and blocking out the world and just figuring out how to tackle this one specific look or shader or technique or workflow that we've never done before. That's what I loved. And I love the exploration of 3D, and I love how it challenges me from a problem-solving perspective. And so I did that for a long time. And then I discovered making tools, but even right before I got to GSG, making tools was also something that was really fun for me, because I like solving problems for people, whether it's through teaching them how to do something or making something that helps them do something, or the combination of that even. So yeah, I think I'm doing what I want to be doing right now. I don't regret any of the decisions or forks in the road that came along that took me down this path at all. I think, would I be happy doing, if I was working on animated films right now, would I be happy? I don't know, maybe. But I also tend to get bored rather quickly, and I like to switch around a lot the way that Chris does. So I think the idea of me working on a film where I'm working on the same shot for weeks at a time would really get old. But again, I thought I was going to be doing character animation, and here I am doing like a lot of rendering. So who knows? You never know where you're going to end up.
Yeah, there seems to be a theme going on.
Yeah,
it's similar for me too. And I guess for me, I'm trying to get to the reason for the question, because I don't want to read too much into it. But maybe it's just an interesting question. But it could be that, you know, there are people that do want to get into a specific part of their the workflow, and when they go try to find that job, that they don't have it, and how do they get that? And maybe that's not the reason for the question, but I resonate a lot with this question for that reason, because there are so many people that are like, well, how do I break in? Do I have to do bad stuff first? Do I have to do stuff I don't like first to get to the fun stuff? Or, you know, what's the way into doing? And again, a theme that comes up in the podcast a lot, what's the way in to do more work that I like and less work that I don't, and be able to get paid to do it? And so I'll just say my kind of quick way in, and how I came up about this, if it helps anybody. And so for me, I've always been interested in animation. I've always been interested in behind the scenes. I've always been, you know, I've always loved music videos and anything animated. I had all the animation programs for our computer when they were like a 386 computer, and I'd learned how to do frame by frame animation and squash and stretch and all that stuff. Had the Etch-a-Sketch animator when I was a little kid and used the heck out of that thing, man. That was an awesome little toy. Always loved, you know, dominoes and all this stuff. So when it came to kind of picking a real job, music videos and commercial animation, but mostly like short film animation, all that stuff was really experimental. It was really fun to watch. The technology was growing super fast. And of course, I've said it a million times, once I saw MK12 do what they did, I was like, all right, I want to do that. And so I chased music videos, a little bit of visual effects, but mostly like animated movie, like animated film posters, like MK12 was doing. I was following that thread into the software. And the whole goal was to make that stuff. And then I realized that there were places in Chicago where I was going to school. And I didn't know this at the time when I moved there, but there were places in Chicago that were doing really cool work, making really cool short film kind of things and getting paid for it. The only difference was, is it was a commercial and it wasn't a short film. And to me, I'm like, well, this is even better. I could get paid to do this stuff. It's short format. I'm with you, Chad. I think working on a long format animation or like the same scene over and over again would it doesn't fit my personality. So the idea that you can make these like 15, 30 second, 60 second animations and get paid for it. Like there's a whole world of advertising here in Chicago. I could kind of learn from. That's where my fork took a turn. Is that how you say it? So that's sure. When my mind, that's when all the Lego pieces added up and it clicked in my head to go, well, wow, okay, I can learn how to animate. I could learn how to, and I was still in After Effects at this time, but I was like, I could learn how to animate. I was learning design. I was slowly learning that I was bad at design and filling in those gaps in my career, and was able to work with some really cool people. So to me, you know, how do you break that down? I got into this because I, like you guys, I had a lot of different passions. I was interested in a lot of stuff, and animation and motion graphics, all this stuff allowed me to play with all of it. It allowed me to play with photography and music, and it allowed me to continue to learn. I think to me, that's the real key about it when I look at my career. What can I do so that the learning never stops? And Chris said a bit of this too. Cinema 4D, the ways that you can combine things in Cinema 4D are literally never ending, right? It will never, you will never find an asymptote. You'll never find a limit. And I love working with tools like that. I love being able to snap things together and create unlimited possibilities. So After Effects and Cinema 4D and editing and the way to tell a story and the way to make it compelling and the way to make a shot look just right was like a never-ending learning process for me. And that's where my career, that's the thread I pulled at through my career. So I get, you know, I'm trying to answer this question in a way that makes sense, but to me, it sounds like we all have a similar path, which is whatever we got into this to do wasn't necessarily what we did forever. And I don't think that's ever really that's a rare case when somebody's like, I want to do this when they're 15 or 10 or even 25 or 35. And once they step into that world, I think it's rare that they just do exactly that. And I think it's really about finding out what ticks your brain, like what tickles your brain, and following that thread through. Like you guys it described discovering that you can make tools for people. I also had that part of it, but it's also more about that I wanted to continue to push and learn. And wherever I could work and wherever I could do to learn new stuff was the thread that I pulled. So that brought me into, you know, owning a company and all this stuff. It doesn't have to be that for you, of course, but finding out what tickles your brain is, I think, kind of part of the answer to this. Does that ring true to you guys? I mean, what do you guys have a way to look at yourself and say, is this something I should be doing, or is it more of like a gut feeling for you guys?
I think it's definitely both a little bit, and I think it's important to keep in mind that how many people, even in your guys' extended lives, who is actually working for what they went to school for? Like everybody's at least like almost everybody's like tangentially removed at least one layer. And then meanwhile, I know bio majors who are like tech support for law firms now. Like it's just everybody ends up all over the place. There's policemen who become motion graphics artists and people who are doing code and now want to become a farmer. Like people mature and figure out what they want a little bit more and try something that, you know, nobody, when you're younger, you're not informed about exactly the context of everything. If I were to go back to
make rent is what you need.
Well, that's also true. But I think if I were to have pursued like the stuff like the company that made Reboot and Beast Wars and all that Mainframe, they're kind of moving away from that. But if I were to have pursued that kind of thing, you almost inevitably you're going to become like a cog in a larger machine, and you're losing a lot of the, I like the overall picture, a little bit of everything. And once you're in there in a practical form, it's like, well, you're not going to be animating and sitting in on the story meetings. That's very unlikely. That'd have to be an incredibly small team. Essentially, that would have to be like a short film type project of, it's like, okay, there's three of us working on it. Like, after you get beyond that, like, you can't be that broad and have those unrelated tasks. So I think if I had pursued that, it wouldn't have been what I was picturing it would be. So as I just kind of meandered around and found out what I liked and what worked, that I followed a path that was better and better and better, and that I liked even more and more, and did click with my brain.
Yeah, and then I don't know if this will make sense. You know what? Honestly, half the time I say a sentence, I don't know if it'll make sense until it's all out. But here we go.
This ought to be good.
That's just a general truism when I'm start speaking. So there's something about the idea that there's something that pulls you into something, whether it's working out or eating differently or your job or a change in career or whatever this is, whatever is a change in your life, there's always something that pulls you into it that is not usually the thing that keeps you into it. There's a big change in, well, I mean, all of our stories have this exact thing, which is the thing that pulled us in and that got us excited was not the thing that kept us there. And I think that's very true for so many parts of life, where you need a bigger push. You want to go get healthy so you look better and like can go like date different people maybe, but really the reason to do it is so you live longer. Right? Like the thing that keeps you staying healthy is about life and watching, you know, your grandkids grow up or whatever. But the thing that got you into it was like a six pack. Right? And I think that knowing that about human psychology and about your brain makes me think that one of the things to keep in mind is that you have to keep an open mind. You have to keep an open mind and find those paths. If you're going through your career, and a door opens that you want to go explore it, find a way to go explore that, even if it's on the side, because you never know what's going to turn into. I mean, I know I didn't tell my full story about eventually, you know, starting my own company and all that stuff, but that thread of like a door opens and I want to go explore it, and it has almost nothing to do with what got me into this at the first time. Like if it were up to me, I'd be making Michel Gondry videos and like more MK12 animations. And I'm still not good enough to be Michel Gondry or MK12, but I found my path. I found my thread. I found my own little weird part of the world, and I tackled it. And so to me, you know, as I try to sum up this, this conversation, I guess, is get into it however you get into it. Whatever's tickling your brain now to go start. If you want to go work at a cartoon place, like go ask, go be an intern, like go figure this out. But once you're in there, be open to the idea that this won't be forever, that you might pivot, you might learn something new, you might learn that you hate doing this stuff. But as you do that, keep the open mind that there are stories, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and thousands of stories, just like the three that you heard today, which don't end in a straight line. So if that's helpful, man, I always hope it's helpful. That's the goal here, is try to make sense of this stuff. But that's something I struggle with all the time. So keep an open mind, and remember, it's not going to end the way you think it is. That never does. That's the best part and the weirdest and best part about life. It doesn't end the way you think it does.
Never does.
All comes back to the Matrix.
Mm-hmm. See,
I should have taken the plaid pill. Let's wrap this up with a very important question. Would you take the red or the blue pill, Jen?
I don't know.
Would you be blissfully ignorant? they're gluten free. Okay, but one of them has whiskey in it. One is to remain blissfully ignorant about the truth, but be generally maybe happy with whatever. Or the other one is to know the absolute truth, but you might not like it.
But I can learn Kung Fu instantly with the other one, right?
That was the cheesiest line. I know Kung Fu.
Oh, come on.
That's every 9-year-old's dream, to be able to just instantly learn Kung Fu. Learn how to fly a helicopter. Who doesn't want that? So
wouldn't that almost be a little disappointing, though? It's like, oh, let me put the redshift disc in. Okay, I know redshift. And then the person next to you does it. It's like, oh, I'm not special for learning redshift anymore.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I'd still like to learn Kung Fu.
You want Kung Fu, but you want to manually learn redshift.
Yeah.
Okay, sure. Yeah. Better question. If there was one thing that you could download and you could just have that skill and just be the best at it, like the way that they do with the helicopter thing, what would it be? Just one, boom, right in your head.
Right now, play piano.
Oh my God, that's mine too. Like I would be the absolute best musician ever if I could just download it without the practice, because I practice hard and I still suck. I'm working my butt off over here, and it's some things it's getting harder and harder to learn jazz piano, but that I would definitely. What kind of piano? What would you be doing, Chad?
I'm not really even into playing piano. I don't know how to play it. It just seems like one of those instruments that if you knew how to play it really, really well, there's pretty much nothing you couldn't pick up. And it takes so long to get good at it unless you're it does. It takes years and years and years to get good at it.
I've had over 12 years of piano training from professionals, and I still have piano as my answer. Like it is.
Plus, it's impressive too. Like you walk into a place, you walk into let's just say a restaurant or something that has live music, and you could probably find maybe 3 or 4 people in that restaurant that could pick up the guitar and like start playing Stairway to Heaven and like at some level of competency. Yeah. Thank you. But like somebody walks up to the piano and just starts ripping, like that's cool, man. Like that is definitely like, whoa, you step back and you're like, okay, that guy knows what's up, you know?
All right, well, let's both do that. We'll do a duet. Chris, are you joining us in the musical world? What would you do?
No, I think I would take a language, actually. If I could just download like Japanese and know that, I would be so happy. My brain does not work with languages. I keep trying to learn different ones, and it is such a struggle. I just think that would be the coolest thing. And it's also like the same thing. It's a huge time sink. Tons of effort, but if you just had it, you could do a bunch with it. So that would be super fun.
That's a good one. And we'll end with this. For those of you still listening, thank you. First of all, that was a fun podcast today, but what would you pick if you could do the helicopter matrix download right to your brain and learn something? What would it be? Put it in the comments.
New GSG product, just knowledge pills.
Knowledge pills. Here, take this pill and you're done. How much would you pay to, like, that's interesting. God. What would you pay to like just download piano in your head?
Yeah, that's an interesting question.
That's weird. Okay. Well, hey, listen, we got another podcast. We got some retinas to go burn. We got the eclipse coming through. Thank you guys so much for listening. And unless there's any last thoughts, make sure you check out the what do you call those? The podcast notes. Thank you, Chris, for knowing what I'm about to say. Definitely check out the show notes this week. We got some links in there. And unless there's anything else, we will see you guys and girls in another Grayscale Gorilla podcast very soon. Thanks for listening.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody. Bye.